This is Phil Farrand. And I am driving home. Couldn't get the key in the lock. It always feels like it's an enormous amount of time when I can't get the key in the lock. And then I listen back to it and it's like, well, that's not too bad. But anyways, all is well. All is well. This is episode 635, I think. I'm taken out of church. We just did some sound setup for Sunday, so I think we're good there. And I'm running front of house sound on Sunday, so that'll be fun. That's always a little bit of a challenge, but it's always fun. Exercise is a different part of my brain. Work is good. Got some things done this week, and you know, put in my time and feel like I did something valuable, so yay, good for that. Writing, I am now editing book 14, so I'm putting in the input from the beta readers, and then I'll start a read through here in a couple of weeks. Get that read through, build all the final files, upload everything, we'll call book 14 done. Move on to book 15. So come 1st of July, be back on book 15. I think I know where I'm going on the rest of book 15 now. I don't know all the details, but at least I know what the story is. So that's cool. So got that taken care of. Working on my King Kamehameha costume, which is actually has to be finished a week from tomorrow, but I think I'm in pretty good shape, and I should be able to make some good progress tonight if there are no interruptions. And if I make the progress I think I can make tonight, then it's kind of little stuff. I've got to do my hat, got to do my shoes, I bought a javelin, a practice javelin, need to spray paint it black, but that's easy. So I think the main robe is going to be done tonight. Roughed in tonight. There'll be a little bit of tweaking. So that'll be good. So I think I'm on schedule with that. So that'll all be fine. Then I have to do potentially some fixes for Paper Bag Day and for July the 4th. Last year, after July the 4th, I decided I would wash my shirt, and for some insane reason, I threw the cravat, the long stretch of cloth, the cravat that I had dyed red, in with the shirt, and yeah, that was a bad idea, and I washed them together, and so my Renaissance shirt just got all stained, and I was going to try to do something with it, and I thought, there's like Ritz color release stuff that you can get and try that and this, that, and the other. And I finally said, you know what? Let's just buy another shirt. So I did that, but I do have to re-dye the cravat one more time to get it a better shade of red because it kind of faded. But I have more bottles of the red, so I think that'll be fine. But that's just that's an easy dyeing. It's not the hot dye. It's just I've got to put some hotter water in and stir it around. That was an easy one. So we've got to take care of that. A few little things here and there. And then I got to get started on Blame It on Someone Else Day. That costume. I think I have all the pieces in for that now. And so it's just a matter of figuring out what I'm doing. I have been using my new tailor dummy, my new dress form. That I built, that is me, it's my dimensions, almost. I've found a few little things, it's like, okay, that's not quite you, but that has really worked out extremely well. Man, having something else that I can hang stuff on and, you know, kind of check fit and all that kind of stuff, and then just take that right off it and throw it on and it have it, wow, that is just so much better. So that's been fun. To have that tool available, and I will use it and need it. I actually have an arm form for it as well now, and so I'm going to make two arms for it that are my arms that can just be pinned on when needed. So that'll be fun. Having that, you know, will be even more help, I hope. At least that's the plan. So I'm just mulling at this point what I'm going to do for Halloween. I don't really know what that is. I have a hint of what I might do for Halloween. You know, this is gets into one of those being free to talk about the goodness and playfulness of God. Being free to predict the goodness and playfulness of God. But we'll we'll see. I mean, I have an idea of what I might do. I will say a genre of costume that I might do for Halloween, but I would have to have a really, really good joke associated with it. I mean, there would have to be, you know, laugh out loud, funny joke that would justify it. So that's all I'll say about that. And I don't know what that joke is at this point. I have no idea what that joke is. But if that joke happens to drop into my spirit and it's funny and I think, you know, oh, that'll work because that would be funny, then I'll tell you all about it. But until then, this is not a genre of costume that I should just stop talking now, because there's no point in talking about it unless I get a really funny joke. So we'll figure that out later. So, you know, the writing's going well, because I'm in an easy phase now, just doing some editing. Costumes are going well, work is going well, friendships are good, having breakfast with a buddy tomorrow as usual, and on Saturday as usual, and all is well. You know, life is good. Life is just good. I haven't eaten yet today. I think I've probably mentioned ivermectin before, and I may have even mentioned that I was going to pursue and try to get a prescription to it. This last weekend, I did pursue following up with some of the doctors that were listed on the FLCCC website, the Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance. The people who formed this are clinicians, very well respected in their fields, published. I mean, they are not quacks. And I think I mentioned to you, they'd been looking around for, can we repurpose any drugs to fight COVID? And they had noticed some things, and other people had noticed some things, and there are coalitions around the world investigating. One of those things that they came up with was ivermectin. It has existed for decades, has a very good safety profile, is well tolerated by people, and seems to be extremely effective. I've probably mentioned this together, but I got the latest update on the stats. One of the early studies was Argentina, I think, healthcare workers. And if I remember, there was like 1,200 healthcare workers, and I think they said, do you want to take ivermectin? And like 800 of them said yes, and 400 of them said no. And by the time they tallied all the results, of the 800 that had taken ivermectin, zero got COVID. Zero. And of the 400 that didn't, 50% of them had contracted COVID, because they were healthcare workers. They were on the front line. So you don't need many studies like that to say, whoa, something's going on. And there have been dozens of these kind of case studies now. But of course, we're still on the line of, well, we got to do vaccines and we got to do this. So I made an appointment with a doctor in California. I did the intake with her, did my interview on Wednesday night, and paid her the fee, which was high, but she was a doctor in West California. Or in West Hollywood in California, so paid that, knew I would, and then purchase 6 months, which is kind of her standard thing, of ivermectin doses. Those are on their way to me. And we'll give this a try for 6 months, and I will probably renew, and hopefully at that point, things will be a little cheaper. Ivermectin is not under patent, and so it can be made freely and has been made freely, but there is going to be, if these trials and things continue on as they are and information continues to spread about ivermectin, then certainly there will be a global demand for it. And that, of course, will drive up the price and drive up scarcity until the manufacturing plants can ramp up. And it would not surprise me at all if at the end of the day, the United States is the very last country to finally say, you know, that ivermectin seems to work. Because everyone who is trying to poo-poo ivermectin goes one place when they're poo-pooing it. And they all, well, you know, Trump recommended that hydrocortisone, hydroxychloroquine, you know, and then someone took fish tank cleaner and killed themselves. And, you know, this is just one of those things. I mean, and it's just silly because this is a completely different drug than the hydroxychloroquine. But that's the justification in their mind. And everyone has such an investment emotionally, financially, mentally in the vaccines are the only solution, that they're just not going to hear anything else. So, okay, that's fine. I can get ivermectin. I'll take ivermectin. And if that means that just for safety's sake, I need to go ahead and, you know, keep wearing masks, I can do that too. So anyways, I'll let you know how the ivermectin stuff goes. On a interesting note, I did come across an article. And actually, Dave Rubin was the one who introduced me to the potentials of this article, because I noticed that he had done an update about a study that had been done by Pew Research in 2020. Now, mind you, it was in 2020, and so there's a lot of stuff that's going on. And I'm not sure that the initial results of the study pointed this out, but then I believe someone else followed along and took their data and started looking at it and started posting the conclusions from the data, and those conclusions were fairly startling. Now, perhaps those conclusions were erroneous. I don't know. But this does make sense to me. So Dave Rubin was talking about the fact that EV Magazine, that there was a new study, and this study, which examined white liberals, moderates, and conservatives, both male and female. And they looked at them from, one of the things they looked at was mental health issues. And what they found is that white liberal women, and when I went over to the actual article, I think it was just, this was the 18 to 36-year-old range, that 56.3% of them have had a doctor or other healthcare provider tell them that they have a mental health condition. So that's the white liberal women, I think, within the ages of 18 to 36. The white conservative women, same age range, only 27%. So the liberals self-reported that they had a doctor or other healthcare provider tell them that they had a mental health problem, 56%. Whereas the conservatives were only at 27%. Now, Dave Rubin was attributing to this to the fact that if you read liberal news, that they're always, you know, they have spouted things that they said were true and then come back and said, no, they're not true, and, you know, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And he went through a long talk about that. I don't think it's quite that, and I think the article was closer. So the article was called Over 50% of Liberal White Women Under 30 Have a Mental Health Issue. Are We Worried Yet? And this is out of EV Magazine, which in reading through it feels like it has a little more conservative bent. But they start off the article by saying a 2020 Pew Research study reveals that over half of white liberal women have been diagnosed with a mental health condition at some point. And so, you know, they go through some other things. They said, for whatever reason, we're not talking about the risk of mental illness women in general face compared to men. Women are 40% more likely to develop depression than men. Due to lower levels of serotonin, we're also more likely to have anxiety and depression because of that deficiency. There are also certain life experiences like childbirth, for example, which can lead to those diagnoses. 1 in 7 women have been diagnosed with postpartum depression in the year following childbirth. Postpartum depression, in particular, is a condition that leaves its victims feeling powerless and without confidence in their own abilities as a mom or a caregiver. Many women with postpartum depression describe feelings like failures. So they said, but aside from those things aside, you know, they do say that the study, they said the study in question, which, by the way, isn't from a news source or a media outlet, but from Pew Research, is, when all said and done, pretty damning. Interestingly enough, the study, which is titled Pew American Trends Panel Wave 64, was dated March 2020, over a year ago. And yet it took a PhD candidate in political science posting about the study on Twitter for it to even garner a smidge of attention. The study, which examined white liberals, moderates, and conservatives, both male and female, found that conservatives were far less likely to be diagnosed with mental health issues than those who identified as either liberal or even very liberal. And what's more, white women suffered most of all. White women ages 18 to 29, not 36, sorry, 18 to 29, who identified as liberal were given a mental health diagnosis from medical professionals at a rate of 56.3% as compared to 28.4% in moderates and 27.3% in conservatives. So there's a big gap between moderates and conservatives and white liberal women. So the doctoral candidate in general, his name was Zach Goldberg, consolidated the study's info into a set of visuals and posted them on his thread on Twitter. But it's important to note that he clarified the following, quote, I didn't write this thread to mock white liberals or their apparently disproportionate rates of mental illness, open parenthesis, and you shouldn't either, close parenthesis. Rather, this is a question of that's underexplored and which may shed light on attitudinal differences towards various social policies. So Dr. Lyle Rossiter, a board-certified psychiatrist who's treated mental disorders for over 30 years, agrees and adds that white liberalism thrives on supposedly championing workers, minorities, the little guy, women, and the unemployed, who they continuously see as wrong, cheated, oppressed, disenfranchised, exploited, and victimized with little or no agencies on their own. As an aside, they say a view that often mutates into infantilizing and patronizing certain groups within the narrative. The people responsible for these crimes, as Rossiter tells it, quote, poverty, disease, war, ignorance, unemployment, racial prejudice, ethnic and gender discrimination, modern technology, globalism, capitalism, imperialism. In the radical liberal mind, this suffering is inflicted upon the innocent by the various big predators and persecutors, big business, big corporations, greedy capitalists, U.S. imperialists, the oppressors, the rich, the wealthy, the powerful, and the selfish. So the article says that's pretty much an exhaustive list of every grievance and every perpetrator that progressives see as responsible for these injustices which plague our disenfranchised communities, while moderates and conservatives seemingly sit idly by, unconcerned with anything but their own privilege. So they go on to say, at the heart of the matter is this. Progressivism is an ideology that supposedly demands equality for all and one that keeps score to an exhausting degree. So all the time, with any kind of critical theory, critical race theory, critical gender theory, or I guess they call that queer theory, you know, transgender rights, all the time they are problematizing. So they are constantly looking for problems. They are constantly looking to highlight problems. And usually it comes back to, this is the article, instead of empowering women and minorities with self-knowledge, strength of character, and resilience to hardship, progressivism encourages victims to stay in a place of fear and helplessness. So the problem with problematizing, and we've talked about this before, that problematizing is actually cognitive dissonance. And one of the things that cognitive behavioral therapy tries to do is to get people to stop problematizing, to stop looking at everything as, you know, how is this offending me? How is this causing me to fail? How is this? And if you end up in that all the time, what you're really doing is you're just letting the flesh tell you all things about how horrible the world is. The problem with that is, if you listen to the flesh and you let the flesh have its way, the flesh is just going to start occupying more and more of your life and consuming more and more and more of your life. And everything will just get worse. So you can say that you're actually championing people's causes. But if all you're doing is looking at the problems all the time, if you're always dividing the world into us versus them, the flesh is just going to take that and ride with it. And it's just going to destroy you because it won't stay confined. I had a guy in college once tell me, he said, I was getting, you know, would do all these debates about theology and that kind of stuff. And I was getting real strident about that. And then he said, I noticed that my kids were getting really strident about things too. And my wife, I started having problems with my wife. And I had it because he thought he could just be strident and authoritarian in one small area where he could claim the truth and he was the truth and all that kind of thing. And he didn't realize that that would backwash into other areas of his life. And the same kind of judgmentalism he was manifesting in how he discussed theology was just backwashing into his relationship with his children and his relationship with his wife. You know, it just wasn't good. And he finally realized what was happening. He slowed himself down. And he, you know, made some changes. And that's really the same process that goes on in all of us. If you focus on the flesh, you know, if you are constantly looking for problems, if you're constantly critical of others, if you're constantly judging others, if you're constantly condemning others, if you're doing those things all the time, what is going to happen is all of that judgment and condemnation is just going to fold back on you. Because once the flesh has your ear, then it will just keep running. And so these studies don't surprise me at all. You know, for people who are in a constant state of anxiety and churning things up and they have no hope, lands, the flesh is just going to put them in a grinder. One of the interesting things that Dave Rubin did say is that not only did he say that he thought the whole news thing was causing problems, but then he also went on to say, He said, I really do believe that conservatives, generally speaking, and not all conservatives, obviously, but believers, they believe in something. And it doesn't mean that we have to believe in the exact same God. It does mean that we all have to have, exactly the same traditions, but believing in something helps people keep sane in the storm. It keeps the ship afloat. And when you're an endless wade of that right now, I don't know, this is automatic translation, but in essence, what he was saying is that if you don't have some sort of core belief that can anchor you, and in the case of Christianity, that core belief, the anchoring is that we believe that there is someone who's watching our behavior. And we believe that there is someone who has a behavior that is the preferred behavior. Jesus said there's a wide gate and a narrow gate, and one leads to destruction and one leads to life. Well, even that idea, if you have that idea that, oh, I'd rather pick the gate that leads to life, that's going to help. That will help you move forward and help you not constantly, you know, and if Jesus talks about loving your neighbor, and he talks about blessing those that curse you and loving your enemy, you know, and doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, all of those things give you a reason to move away from the flesh and move into the spirit. But if you have none of that belief in you and you just think we're only here for a little while and then we're dead and we're all gone and there's nothing to it, and that all these people are suffering because there's this horrible society and rah, you know, and then it just turns into rah. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on. I mean, it will, the flesh will just take those people down. So it doesn't surprise me at all that between conservatives and liberals, there would be twice the level of diagnosed mental illness, if that's actually what it was. Because if you dwell and live in those spaces, they will just burn you up. And that's really a shame. You know, whereas if you have some belief in a higher power, if you have some belief in a higher standard, if you have belief that we are all among the human race and that we are all striving to get to a better place and we're all working together, and you lean away from us versus them into a we all ideology, makes you more empathetic towards others. And in the process of doing that, it suppresses more of the instincts of the flesh. And it's always a good day when you can suppress the instincts and the plans of the flesh. Because it doesn't matter what the flesh is trying to get you to do, that way is destruction. That's why the easiest way for us to figure out what direction we should go is just use the fruit of the Spirit as our guardrails. So if you have love, joy, peace, and patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, if you have those things, you're on the right path. Period. It'll all work out. But if you're doing the rest of the stuff, not so good. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.